This is Focus West Michigan for Tuesday, September 1, 2026. I'm Joe Bilecki with your local news. When Kent County voters step into the ballot box in November, they will consider a jail millage renewal. On Tuesday, the Kent County Sheriff toured the aging facility with news crews showcasing its most urgent needs. WGVU's Dee Morrison reports.
The Kent County Corrections and Detention Millage is a dedicated property tax funding operations, staffing, programming, and infrastructure for the main county jail and the juvenile detention center. Sheriff Michelle LaJoy-Young explains approval of the proposed 0.98 mils would fund a renewal and increase through 2045, continuing operation of the county's central booking system and funding medical and psychological services improvements.
When somebody is receiving medical treatment or psychological treatment, doing it in a facility that isn't well suited for it can actually have a negative impact on their health. So that's also a very primary function of this.
The sheriff emphasizes the original jail wing, built in 1972, now houses the medical unit in a converted cell block. It no longer meets modern standards of care and is overwhelmed by increasing demand for mental health and substance use disorders treatment.
Better medical and psychological services, better workflow, safer because we're not having to export people out to other facilities, and in the long run, less expensive for the community.
Sheriffs are constitutionally obligated to operate jails. If the millage fails, the $24 million shortfall would be diverted from the Kent County General Fund, potentially impacting other departments and services. I'm Dee Morrison.
Grand Rapids residents and visitors have a new option for getting around downtown. VO e-scooters and e-bikes are replacing Lime as the city's micro-mobility vendor. WGVU's David Limbaugh has the details.
Grand Rapids adopted a single-operator program when we launched our shared micro-mobility program back in 2022.
Max Gillis is Strategic Initiatives Manager for Mobile GR, the city's transportation, mobility, parking, and curb management department.
So after 3 great years with Lime, we had a competitive process, and VO was selected through that process.
He says VO's standing and sitting scooters and trikes are more affordable.
The standard rate currently is $1 to unlock with our Lime provider and 36 cents per minute, and the new proposed rate is $1 to unlock and 33 cents per minute.
The new access rate saves riders money.
The current access program is 50% off the standard rate, and the new proposal is for $5 a month. That includes 30 free minutes each day and 50% off riding beyond that threshold.
Since 2022, more than 400,000 unique riders have taken over 1.9 million trips through downtown. VO is aiming to have 500 units available this year, with upwards of 2,000 by spring. VO will also provide riders a free helmet. Lime units will still be available through September, giving riders the opportunity to make a smooth transition to VO. I'm David Limbaugh.
Without their own recreation center, the city manager says Holland will eventually need to cut some of the activities and programs they currently offer. WGVU's Phil Dawson reports that's the main reason work on a new $22 million recreation building could start this month.
Home for the recreation programming our department has provided to this community for decades and decades and decades.
City Manager Keith Van Beek says Holland needs a recreation center because local schools are no longer able to rent or loan the city space to host their activities.
Without this home that we're building for our recreation programming, we would get to the point where we'd have to cut the programming that we provide to the community because we wouldn't have space to do it in.
The recreation center is planned on city-owned land at Smallenberg Park along Fairbanks Avenue. Assistant City Manager Matt Van Dyken says it means removing a playground, pavilion, and some trees, but not the skate park.
One of the questions that we often get asked is, what's going to happen with the skate park? Staying right where it is, it can be open all during the construction process.
To pay for the recreation center, the city already has a $5 million donation, and Mayor Nathan Bach says they'll borrow $22 million by selling bonds.
We need to borrow some money in order to be able to build this.
Assistant City Manager Van Dyken says site preparation could begin this month.
It's exciting for us to get to the point where we might actually be getting heavy machinery out there and get the site prepped.
I'm Phil Dawson.
Three Muskegon men dealing fentanyl are off the streets after the Kent Area Narcotics Enforcement Team ended their operation. WGVU's Dee Morrison has more on the arrests.
After a months-long investigation, the Kent Area Narcotics Enforcement Team, KNET, has seized heroin, fentanyl, methamphetamines, cocaine, and guns, and arrested three Muskegon men on drug and weapons charges.
Yes, it's great to get the drugs, the guns, and the cash from the operations off the street. But more importantly, it's the suspects we're arresting. In this instance, they all had history. One in particular is currently on parole for delivery manufacture of drugs causing death.
Public Information Officer Sergeant Scott Dietrich says the Kent County Sheriff's Office is committed to disrupting drug trafficking that contributes to the destruction of lives and families throughout West Michigan.
The fentanyl is just so extremely dangerous, and we've seen it play out many times in Kent County where we'll get what we call a bad batch, where it will be some drugs mixed with fentanyl, and you'll see overdoses popping up all across Metro Grand Rapids and even reaching out into the townships. And that's what we're trying to prevent.
Working with the Michigan State Police and Muskegon partners, KNET arrested the men in Muskegon who now face multiple charges, including felony firearm, possession, delivery, manufacture of controlled substances, parole, probation, and habitual offender violations. I'm Dee Morrison.
The wait you may have experienced inside a local emergency room is getting shorter. WGVU's David Limbaugh tells us about a Grand Rapids Fire Department pilot program keeping high-need residents out of the ER by addressing their needs before they become a medical crisis.
The Grand Rapids Fire Department partnered with Corewell Health on the Medical Priority and Wellness Response Program, also known as MPOWER, a pilot program aimed at reducing emergency room visits and 911 calls. GRFD responds to over 17,000 medically related calls annually, with many of those calls rooted in social challenges rather than medical emergencies.
And we realized that about 14% of those incidents were a repeat 911 caller. That said, 32 of them, they had 10 plus incidents per year.
GRFD's EMS Captain Matt Hutter is MPOWER's team leader. He says 6 months into the program, Corewell and the fire department have helped residents get the appropriate assistance before it becomes an actual emergency.
We've had 175 client interactions. That means of those 30 referrals, we've been seeing our clients many, many times, some more than others because they do require specialized attention. But in that time, we've made 76 resource connections with different programs that are able to help the members of our community.
Over the next 6 months, organizers hope to continue with weekly wellness checks, increase case management capacity, and see a documented drop in repeat 911 calls among the city's highest need residents. I'm David Limbaugh.
Coming up soon, WGVU's Dee Morrison looks at the effects of anesthesia on older adults, but first, news from around the state. Vice President J.D. Vance spent most of his time attacking Democratic Senate nominee Abdul El-Sayed during a rally speech in Metro Detroit on Monday. Colin Jackson has more.
Vance campaigned to a few hundred-person crowd. Republicans have hammered El-Sayed for his friendship with California-based streamer Hassan Piker, calls to abolish immigration and customs enforcement, and the support he's received from Democratic socialists. Vance accuses Democrats of being too divisive.
Send a message to the elected leadership of the Democrat Party that if you want us to vote for you, you've got to stop sending us crazy people to represent your party.
El-Sayed says he believes in capitalism, not socialism. He has recently reiterated that Piker does not work or speak for his campaign. Vance did not mention tensions with Canada or Iran. I'm Colin Jackson in Sterling Heights.
Saginaw locals came to Monday night's city council meeting in protest over a recent use of force incident by city police. Over the weekend, multiple videos surfaced of Stephanie Nicole Anderson being arrested by multiple officers in the city's downtown. The video shows Anderson being tased, forced to the ground, and then struck several times by officers. Sharon Anderson is Stephanie's mother. Sharon says her daughter is dealing with multiple injuries.
Her right eye is messed up. She can't see out of it. It's bad in the back of her face. And right here, they had glued her face back together. But she also got a lot of pain going on.
Protesters marched from a nearby park to the city council meeting. They called for transparency and criticized what they say are multiple recent incidences of excessive force used by the police. The Saginaw police said in a statement that the officer and sergeant who were, quote, directly involved have been placed on administrative duty. The Michigan State Police are investigating the incident. Focus West Michigan is brought to you by listeners like you. To support this show and everything we do here, visit WGVUnews.org and click the donate button. And for a weekly dose of news right to your inbox, sign up for the WGVU newsletter. The Michigan Society of Anesthesiologists warns that studies show anesthesia used on older adults during surgery can significantly impact their cognitive health. WGVU's Dee Morrison spoke with its past president, Dr. Michael Lewis, about the impacts.
I think we have to recognize that there really is a very small reduction in function as one ages. if one considers solely regular living. The problem arises is when you stress a patient, and then after the age of around 45, 50, there's a steep decline in the ability of patients to manage stress. And surgical interventions are prime examples of physiological stress. And so there is a decreased ability based both upon disease burden and lifestyle choices of that elderly population to cope with the stress of surgery. So the Michigan Society of Anesthesiologists encourages patients who are of an older demographic to have very detailed conversations with their anesthesia care team, both about cognitive function and about the ability to cope with surgery physiologically. It becomes very important when one recognizes that 40 to 50% of surgeries done in the USA are on adults 65 years and older, which has become our kind of measure of aging. And the conversation should focus around cognitive function, overall health, and medications. Not only does the patient have some degree of responsibility to have these conversations, anesthesiologists have to be mindful of the effects of anesthesia on both physical health and cognitive health in this age group. So that is the reason why these conversations are so important.
People often worry heading into a surgery, and the anesthesia is part of the concern, but I don't know that widespread knowledge is there about the cognitive effects. What should they be discussing with their care team heading into surgery?
Obviously, the first thing is if one has a pre-existing cognitive problem, it tends to get worse with surgery. And it can range anything from, you know, very mild confusion immediately after the surgery because of the drugs to full-blown what we call delirium. You know, grandma has gone bananas and is climbing out the bed, etc., to which we call hyperactive delirium. And then there's hypoactive delirium where the patient becomes very somnolent for, you know, hours before and can, in rare cases, proceed to full-blown dementia. But what patients don't realize is that anesthesia can affect cognitive function even when the patient appears very intact cognitively in the preoperative period. Often, these changes can only be detected by kind of complex neuropsychological tests, but they're there.
So that would be a first step with a patient, having those discussions with their doctor, with their care team about any current cognitive concerns and just opening that conversation.
Right. So that conversation is so important because anesthesiologists in the 21st century have to realize that the anesthetic delivered has to be tailored to that age group, not only in terms of their cardiac, their respiratory, their renal function, kidney function, but also recognizing the effects of anesthesia on the cognitive function of the patient. So we know, we have well-established data that very deep anesthesia, and that can be measured through a number of methodologies, but most commonly through what we call compressed spectral edge EEG, very deep anesthesia for prolonged periods can predispose to confusion in the postoperative period. We also have evidence that there is some protective action by a class of drugs, most commonly dexmedetomidine, which is an alpha-2 agonist, that does provide, there's some evidence that tends to point to some protection by those agents. And the avoidance of deep anesthesia with some of the anesthesia gases has also been shown to minimize the effects. And then there's other drugs such as a very commonly known drug, midazolam, which is a benzodiazepine that people use for anxiolysis around procedures, that has been shown to increase the risk of confusion in the postoperative period. So it requires a team effort. It requires the patient to be aware and own their health and have that discussion. It requires the anesthesiologist or the anesthesia provider to be aware of the issues involved. And there's actually some stuff that has been shown to be protective. For example, years of education has been predictive of reduced cognitive dysfunction in the postoperative period. Some degree of prehabilitation, the idea of exercising your mind, you know, prior to surgery, as we do with some of the physical aspects of anesthesia has been shown to provide some protection. And then, you know, a full discussion about the drugs and medications that a patient has been taking needs to take place, because, you know, they can also contribute.
My husband, he just had his wisdom teeth out, and he anticipated they would knock him out. They really had a long discussion about that and elected not to, to go with different options.
That is a great illustration of where an informed patient recognizes, you know, the possibility of some degree of effect on the cognition, has that discussion, and where techniques are available that don't have such a great effect on cognition. That's a prime example of where this kind of discussion has most impact. It's not just cognition. All aspects of physiology have a greater impact on the elderly patient. I strongly suggest that older patients should have a detailed discussion with their care team about the potential side effects of anesthesia, make any modifications to the plan. I think, as you very clearly illustrated in your example, alternatives to deep sedation. Obviously, you want maximal management of any concomitant health issues. Obviously, avoid alcohol and recreational drugs before surgery. I always suggest a patient take a good night's sleep before their surgery. The Michigan Society Anesthesiologist is available as a resource. It's a statewide organization of anesthesiologists who are deeply dedicated to representing and advancing the practice of anesthesiology and providing physician-led ethical anesthesia care. And I think if people have questions, they should reach out either to their individual anesthesiologist or to the organization, which is a rich source of resources.
I'm Dee Morrison.
This has been Focus West Michigan from WGVU for Tuesday, September 1, 2026. I'm Joe Bilecki. Our audio operations manager is Rick Bierling, and our news and public affairs director is Patrick Center. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll be back with more news and events in West Michigan tomorrow. Thanks for listening.